Hey, all, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new project, Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. They've got two new audiobooks read by the deepest voice in libertarianism, the great historian Jeff Riggenbach. Our Last Hope, Rediscovering the Lost Path to Liberty by Michael Meharry of the 10th Amendment Center is available now. And Beyond Democracy, co-authored by Frank Karsten of the Mises Institute Netherlands and journalist Carl Beckman, will be released this month. And they're only just getting started. So check out listenandthink.com. You may be able to get your first audiobook absolutely free. That's Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. It's the Scott Horton Show. Happy Friday to you. Hope you're having a good one today. It's Friday, right? All right, good. All right, I'm Scott Horton. The website is scotthorton.org. Keep all my interview archives there. And also you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /Scott Horton Show. Please do. All right, next up on the show today is Colleen Rowley. You know her as the FBI lawyer who tried to get a FISA warrant to search Moussaoui's belongings. And if they had allowed her to do so back in August of 2001, she could have traced his connections to the ringleaders of the 9/11 plot and probably stopped that attack. I'd give it about a 90-something percent chance, but the supervisors wouldn't let her do that, her and her colleagues, one of whom actually wrote in the memos, "This guy, Moussaoui, I think he might want to try to crash into the World Trade Center." He was just speculating, but pretty keen on the ball there. Welcome back to the show, Colleen. Good to talk to you.
Yes, thanks for having me. And just let me correct slightly that this was actually the agents in our office who were doing this fighting with headquarters. It was not me personally. I was the whistleblower 8.5 months afterwards that led to the inspector general investigation of what had happened. Otherwise, you know, we could still be in the dark about that whole occurrence and. Mm. Otherwise, it was correct. It just was not me personally before 9/11.
Oh, I see. Well, but you were the lawyer who had to basically approve the agents, like tell them to, go ahead and talk to the supervisor about going to the court, right?
That's right. And the agents were so astute that in 2 days, disinformation that 9/11 could not have been prevented, all of the facts are on the opposite side. This agent walked into my office, called me on the night they arrested Moussaoui, already realizing that what they had, you know, was a terrorist suspect. Then 2 days later, they had put this all in writing, sent it off to France to try to get more information. And the agent identified the exact statutes that were later charged. You know, the high-level Chertoffs of the world took years to figure this out, and this agent had figured it out in about 2 or 3 days. So, in any event, one of these days we'll get a luxury of perhaps realizing the truth about stuff instead of continuing on this post 9/11 nonsense that continues to go on.
Well, now I'm trying to remember if it was something that you wrote or something that somebody wrote about you or that. You know, tangentially applied here about the Boston bombing and how some of the incriminating information against Moussaoui and his brother, the stuff that should have been plenty good for the court that we have reason to believe at a lower than probable cause standard, especially that these guys have ties to foreign terrorist groups. It was ties to Chechen jihadists.
Right,
but the Chechen
right.
jihadists are the pets of the Americans. And so... And maybe Louis Free had a specific role to play politically in that or something. Could you elaborate about that angle?
Yeah, the neocons have gone out, and the Chechen group, there's a group called Americans, I think, for Peace in Chechnya. You'll always find Woolsey, the former CIA director, involved in these groups. He was also involved in the group that took lots of money from the Mujahideen Khalq, which is a rebel group. It was a terrorist group too on our U.S. own list. But there are groups of high level officials with neocon leanings, and you'll always find Woolsey, Rudy Giuliani. Trying to think of some of the others, and they curry favor with rebel groups in Chechnya, in Iran. Certainly before that, it was the Charlie Wilson war situation, and other places. Because what they're trying to do is topple regimes and sow insurrection. So they make these, the theory is the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That theory. And of course, this means that there is no real principal definition of terrorism, because if you have a principal definition of a group that is killing civilians for political purposes, the MAC, the Chechen group, and going back to the 9/11, that Chechen group was at the time headed up by a guy named Ibn al-Khattab. And Mousawi was directly connected to Ibn al-Khattab. He had fought with the Chechens. He had recruited for Ibn al-Khattab, and that was known. That was not in dispute. The dispute that arose was how you say Mousawi is acting on behalf of a foreign power. The mistake was our headquarters did not consider the Chechen rebel group or the group of Chechen terrorists to be terrorists. That was number one. And number two, they had not read a key memo in April of 2001, 5 months before 9/11. This key memo was out there that was directed to Louis Free, and it went to nine other assistant directors, one of whom was right in the chain of command with the Mousawi case. And they claim they did not read that memo afterwards. The memo said Osama bin Laden and Ibn Khattab are heavily entwined and are going to commit a terrorist act. I mean, it's the main, when you realize the true facts about 9/11, the real remedy afterwards was simply to order these officials to read the documents that were coming to them, the important documents. That was one of the main remedies. And in fact, as far as I know, that's never been done. And I can name other instances of exactly the same mistake that these officials afterwards claimed that they did not read, that occurred with the Phoenix memo asking headquarters to check flight schools. It also occurred in the Mousawi case where the legal counsel, the head legal counsel, he implied he had read the Minnesota Declaration, but in fact, it turns out he had relied simply on a short verbal briefing. So in any, I know we're way distracted on this. Every time you ask me, it's because people don't have, the majority of the American people don't have any understanding of what the truth is and how these reckless errors were made. And in fact, that's why they want to launch wars. They want to launch warrantless monitoring. They want to launch torture. All of these terrible, stupid things that have happened since 9/11, because they don't really know. They were misled by officials afterwards who are trying to cover their own butts, by the way.
Right. Well, and now here goes to, and by the way, people, you can go back if you search my name and Colleen Rallies, or just go to my website, scotthorton.org. We've done a whole interview or two about 9/11 specifically, but here's a big tie into our current topic today, which is the new head of the FBI, James Comey, You wrote this great piece for the New York Times, questions for the FBI nominee. And I forget now whether you mentioned this in here, but this is so extremely important to me. This is where I'm starting off. And that is the Khobar Towers attack in 1996, which was an al-Qaeda attack, which I think even William Perry confesses now and others confess now was Osama bin Laden and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed that did that. But the politics, especially Louis Free, and his politics mandated that the Israelis would prefer that we blame Iran. So they made up this ridiculous thing about Iranian-backed Saudi Hezbollah did it, which was completely not the case. And Senator Sessions just praised James Comey in the hearing the other day for you're the guy who got it wrong and indicted Iranian Hezbollah in court for that attack. And that's one of those things where, you know, if they had told the truth about what was going on there, it was the anniversary of George H.W. Bush's putting combat forces on the ground in the Arabian Peninsula. If they had told the truth about what was going on there back in 1996, we'd have had a whole different run-up to 9/11 with the embassy attacks and the coal and the attempted millennium plot. And, I mean, we'd have been living in an entirely different world, except because the politics were, we have to preempt any possibility of rapprochement with Iran. We'll go ahead and level this false accusation against them.
Yeah, so. I think that's correct from what I know. Louis Free rushed that indictment. I think he announced it on the day he was retiring. It was the day before. He rushed it because he wanted to take credit. I actually attended some of the families' meetings, one major meeting of the victims' families with Louis Free. He arranged this big affair at FBI headquarters and also Perry came to the defense secretary at the time, and it was a big deal. And it was always, he claimed he was being forthright, but I could see the same thing was going on where they were jumping, they were reaching for straws to find suspects at the time. Saudi Arabia was not at all cooperative. And that hampered the investigation. And I think that's correct. I don't think that this was right at all.
Colleen, if I can just interject here real quick from the PBS Frontline documentary about John O'Neill, the Al-Qaeda-obsessed counterterrorism FBI agent from New York, that he got in trouble with Louis Free because he used a bad word when he said, "The Saudis are blowing smoke up your ass, boss." Oh. It wasn't it wasn't Hezbollah. It was these Al-Qaeda guys. And that Louis Free pretended that, "Oh, I can't believe you used the A word in my presence." When? And that was the end of that trail of evidence.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that's correct. And Comey is very much a team player, so he's always going to go along. You can see this over and over in his responses. He, he has this public media perception that he's a bit of a whistleblower himself, having stood up that one time in the hospital room. But if you really know the full story behind that, it was less of a substantive objection to warrantless monitoring than it was merely to the legal footing, to the legal rationale that obviously probably John Yoo and Addington had come up. John Yoo and Addington favored unbridled inherent executive authority to override Congress and the courts. This was an unbelievable theory that once you have a war going on, the president has unbridled power to override the Congress and the courts. That was Yoo and I think Addington as well, Cheney's legal counsel. So after 9/11, those legal memos that legalized all of these previously illegal things had the wrong legal rationale. When you get to 2004, Jack Goldsmith takes over, and he says, we can find a better legal way that will be stronger. And his way, it seems like, was footing these abusive, terrible constitutional abuses in the authorization to use military force of October 2001. So this is just a bit of a deduction or a conclusion from reading the IG report. But again, there's a huge problem with the public perception believing that James Comey is kind of a hero whistleblower, when in fact what he was actually disputing was to make the warrantless monitoring stronger and more legally based on the authorization to go to war.
Wow.
Hello?
So, yeah, no, that's a very important point there because, in fact, that whole – I forget where I read the best account of this. I think it was in Bamford's book or something. It really sounds like the scene out of a movie where Comey went and had even the very sick Ashcroft and Mueller, the head of the FBI, all threatening to resign in an unprecedented Saturday night massacres kind of a thing, only worse over it and whatever. But then, like you're saying, it really was a matter of dotting I's and crossing T's. Don't go with the president is the commander in chief and that's all you need to know theory. Go with the Congress passed the authorization to use military force and that's all you need to know theory.
Right.
But really, if it was any kind of substantive change to what the NSA was actually doing, we don't know what that might have been, right?
That's right. That's the $64 million question that Comey refused on the Tuesday hearing, but has repeatedly refused. And he claims that it's classified. If anything, the legal rationale for the NSA's warrantless monitoring has undergone three different changes, changes, because you know why do they have to keep finding new legal rationales for this? Because there is no way that you can legalize something that is completely violates the Fourth Amendment. The first one looks, in all fairness, standing up against unbridled inherent executive power is something that, we should give credit for Comey to. But on the other hand, no congressperson, when they passed in October 2001, voted to go to war on Afghanistan. None of them realized that they were also voting to repeal the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and allow this massive data collection on Americans. If they had been told, if anyone had been told in Congress that when you vote for war on Afghanistan, it also means this. That's what I keep mentioning, because this AUMF now has also been used for drone assassination as a source of legal authority as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that's an important point, too, that when you talk about repealing FISA, that's because FISA doesn't just authorize a bunch of sub-Fourth Amendment searching and that kind of thing. It is a criminal statute that says you have to do it this
that's
way
right.
or you go to prison. It's a felony
that's right.
statute.
You know, the hearing record just closed. It's kind of unusually short. First of all, it was only 2.5 hour hearing, and a lot of the senators did not ask the questions in my New York Times, the questions I suggested. And I was trying to get at this whole issue, by the way, in there. They did focus a little bit on his having authorized waterboarding and sleep deprivation. And to their credit, two or three of the senators, especially Al Franken, read the whole gory, gruesome description of being shackled with your arms and your feet to the floor, wearing a diaper for up to 180 hours, 7.5 days. When he read that and then asked Comey, is that torture? I mean, Comey had no other choice but to admit, to say, yes, I guess it is torture. Unbelievable. So they did an okay job on that, but they didn't ask him to explain why he had signed off on those things in 2005. These are complete no-brainers that these are illegal.
Right. Well, and pardon me, that is it so out of bounds to think that James Comey is a guilty felon in a co-conspirator in a plot to break the law and torture people? Why isn't he in prison? And meanwhile, Franken and the rest of them are going to vote to confirm him to be the head of the FBI. The only question is, do you kind of regret it now or some ridiculous thing like that? If I planned with some other private citizens to torture somebody and to come up with excuses for it, they would put me in prison. In fact, Comey would put me in prison.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. You have to kind of grade on the curve, so I'm kind of a relativist in some ways. This was an improvement over the Mukasey confirmation. I mean, you can say that much. It's a low bar, by the way, to be an improvement over the Mukasey confirmation. But
that's
about
like being a better sec def than Rumsfeld.
That's right. I mean, that's about all you can say. What they did is 2.5 hours. Our one Senator Klobuchar just made small talk and bragged about herself. She used up her time. And then they had a couple of days to come up with further questions. This morning, I actually sent an 11th-hour plea to Leahy staffers asking that they keep the record open for at least another day or two so that senators could actually formulate some additional questions. There's even a bad comparison between the Comey confirmation hearing and the Brennan one, because at least in the Brennan one, they used their leverage a little bit to try to get the drone assassination memos. And they did keep it open. They postponed once or twice. Look at the difference with Comey. Comey's, has about the same. He authorized waterboarding. He authorized warrantless monitoring. And here's probably the most troublesome thing about Comey. He still believes in indefinite detention without recourse to trial. He was the main spokesman for the Padilla case of holding him incommunicado. And actually, they did exercise sensory deprivation and other lighter forms of torture on Padilla. He didn't have an attorney for two years. This one, they did not get Comey to even say he was sorry for, like the waterboarding and sleep deprivation. They didn't even, because he still believes in that. And he gave a speech here in 2009 where he said, we have to find a way to incapacitate suspects, even American suspects, who we don't have enough evidence to try in court, or a foreign government gives us secret evidence that can't be made public, or for other reasons. He said this in 2009.
Oh,
now,
man.
Those questions should be further, you know, delved into. And again, I think the hearing, the record probably just closed a few minutes ago. Unless my 11th hour appeal, you know, Hail Mary was successful, I don't think there's even going to be a chance now for a senator to ask those additional questions.
Man, yeah. Now, on that Padilla thing, that was a very brief rundown of Padilla, and mostly kind of on the premise that everybody already knows about that case. But for people who don't know about that case, you're talking about a guy who was accused of being associated with Al-Qaeda, but who was arrested on American soil by civilian police and then was turned over to Donald Rumsfeld and George Tenet and was, as you said, held without a lawyer. So this is the ultimate violation. What they did to Padilla is the ultimate repudiation of the Fifth and Sixth Amendments. I mean, there's just absolutely no way in the world that you could say that that is legal, what they did to him.
Right. This is actually repealing due process, which goes back 800 years to the Magna Carta. Because what you're saying is you can hold somebody without charges, without evidence, without an attorney, without obviously anything. And it's a precursor of what the fear was in the passing in 2011, the 2011 National Defense Authorization Act, which explicitly says Americans can be arrested for these detained, I should say, that's the word, detained, obviously indefinitely without charges, et cetera, by the military. And so Padilla was the exact example where they did this. Now, the courts later found that he did have that right to habeas corpus, which put them into a quandary, and then they had to charge him with something other than what they claimed he was being held for, which was the dirty bomb. And so the Padilla case is should be definitely put back into the Pandora box. Unfortunately, Comey believes in it. He believes that this is the way to go. And it's what I call the law of war, which has also been greatly subverted. The law of war is trumping the rule of law. And you know, his only comment was, we hope it's a rare case. You know, I don't know of any other case than Padilla. So that's his only kind of retracting slightly, was it's a rare case. But, you know, all it takes is a little more of this panic, and all of a sudden they're doing it on a more massive scale. You know, even the roundup of Japanese during World War II, that has never legally, Supreme Court held that it was okay at the time. And so when people think that could never happen again, well, no, it could happen, because it's never actually been, we never had a court reverse itself on that, on the detention of Japanese. So this is why we have a lot of work ahead of us, especially in getting this information out, so that people like Comey that are in positions of power will not attempt to do that again.
Well, I mean, the thing is, too, it wasn't just Padilla. It was, I mean, it is relatively rare, I guess, but they did it to Almari, too. And Almari, he was not an American citizen, but just as well, he is a U.S. person under the Fifth and Sixth Amendments,
right,
no doubt about that.
Right. Yep, I forgot that one. Yep, you know.
And, you know, they rounded up. Remember, they rounded up. In fact, I don't know, you didn't help them, did you, with the mass, Ashcross mass roundup of Muslims after September 11th under the bogus material witness statute?
Well, if we go back to 9/11, our office, and I was actually the person sending this report every day, that had to tell headquarters, FBI headquarters, how many people we had detained. And every single day, for I think 3-4 months, and it got to be over 1,000 nationally. And every single day when I would fax this, it was mandated. One time I forgot to send it in at the end of the day, and they called me at midnight at home. And every single day I kept writing 1, 1, 1. That meant the total, and that was the only. That was Moussaoui. It referred to Moussaoui, and it was the only person who actually was eventually charged and was actually convicted in criminal court as being connected to the 9/11. Our office, you know, and all, I guess I shouldn't be bragging here, but our office was the only office who really did this right. the leads that came in to go out and detain people, even when they had leads like this, and sometimes there is circumstantial evidence, whatever, but our agents did not just say, run out and grab them and put them in jail and then walk away. What they did is they talked to them. In one case, I think there was a Pakistani or something official that they had some circumstantial evidence. So that agent stayed in a hotel. He was with the guy for a few hours, you know, or the better part of a day until they found out that his story matched up. But they became friends because they were eating together and whatever. He didn't put him in jail and say, I'm throwing away the key because, you know, somebody gave me a lead. He actually did it the right way. He the little bit of suspicion that existed, and he talked to the guy and he stayed with him for a little while, and they ended up to be friends. So that's the way these things, when the American public is misled to believe that there's not a right way to balance liberty and security, that you have to use these draconian illegal methods because you have to sacrifice the law. That's a part of a utilitarian logic, and actually it's the worst, most faulty thing in the world. And you heard all, this is what I was watching that hearing, and in about half of our senators preface their remarks to Comey with, it's a struggle between the law and security. It's a struggle. It's a trade-off between constitutional rights. Where is the balance between privacy and security? Every one of them used those words, trade-off, struggle, balance,
I thought we already had a Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
What the hell do I know?
When you do illegal actions, there is no trade-off, because what happens is ultimately it harms security. I don't know how to say this so many times. If people understood that torturing Guantanamo, for instance, very illegal to put all those people there without charges, that has actually increased the threat. It didn't lower our threat of being harmed. It increased it. Because now it's helping recruiting and everything else. And you can find massive warrantless monitoring. What it does is it adds irrelevant data to this giant haystack where you're looking for the rare Abdulmutallab or Sarnoff is a perfect example in Boston. They're off running around collecting information on Occupy protesters, irrelevant information, so that they can get their statistics for putting all this data in. And meanwhile, Russia tip that comes in that this guy is connected to the Chechens gets short shift. This has happened over and over again. The American people have to understand there's no trade-off between following these laws that make sense and work.
The thing of it is there is a trade-off, but we already made it when we passed the Constitution and created this government in the first place, mm-hmm. allow them to exist in the first place. And the limit on their power is the Bill of Rights, and it's supposed to be absolute. And I'm sorry that we're all out of time. We got to go. We got 15 seconds here. Thank you. Colleen Rowley, everybody, 2002 Time Person of the Year for courageous whistleblowing. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Are you sick of the neocons and the Israel lobby pretending as though they've earned some kind of monopoly on foreign policy wisdom in Washington, D.C.? These peanut clowns who've never been right about anything? Well, the Council for the National Interest is pushing back, putting America first, and telling the lobby to go take a hike. The empire's bad enough without the neocons making it all about the interests of a foreign state. Help CNI promote peace. Visit their site at councilforthenationalinterest.org and click donate under About Us at the top of the page. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey everybody, Scott Horton here. Ever think maybe your group should hire me to give a speech? Well, maybe you should. I've got a few good ones to choose from, including how to end the war on terror, the case against war with Iran, central banking in war, Uncle Sam and the Arab Spring, the ongoing war on civil liberties, and of course, why everything in the world is Woodrow Wilson's fault. But I'm happy to talk about just about anything else you've ever heard me cover on the show as well. So check out youtube.com/Scott Horton Show for some examples, and email scott@scotthorton.org for more details. See you there.
Hey y'all, Scott here. I think you ought to consider subscribing to The Future of Freedom, the journal of the Future Freedom Foundation, in print or online. The Future of Freedom features the best writers in the libertarian movement, the fearless Jacob Hornberger, individualist anarchist Sheldon Richman, and crusading journalist Jim Bovard, along with Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Tim Kelly, Richard Ebling, and many more. And the July issue features one by your favorite radio host on America's Middle East policy, entitled Stupidity or the Plan. So head on over to fff.org/subscribe and sign up for The Future of Freedom in print or online. online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
Oh, man, I'm late. Sure hope I can make my flight.
Stand there.
Me? I am standing here.
Come here.
Okay.
Hands up. Turn around.
Whoa, easy.
Into the scanner. Ooh, what's this in your pants?
Hey, slow down. It's just my...
Hold it right there. Your wallet has tripped the metal detector. What's this? The Bill of Rights?
That's right. It's just a harmless stainless steel business card-sized copy of the Bill of Rights from SecurityEdition.com. They're for exposing the TSA as a bunch of liberty-destroying goons who've never protected anyone from anything. Sir, now give me back my wallet and get out of my way. Got a plane to catch.
Have a nice day.
Play a leading role in the security theater with the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's the size of a business card, so it fits right in your wallet, and it's guaranteed to trip the metal detectors wherever the police state goes. That's SecurityEdition.com. And don't forget their great Fourth Amendment socks.
Hey, guys, I got his laptop.
Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against a depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com.